Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in with you for Joe today. Until 3 o'clock, I'm in for the very sad reason, of course, that Joe was is like many of our colleagues here today, attending Charlie Bird's funeral, and of course, all our thoughts are with our colleague Claire and Orla and Nessa and all of Charlie's family. Okay, I want to go straight to Sashko now. Sashko, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie.
Sashko. You're a photographer, a news photographer, and yep. Last November you were out on the streets of Dublin with many of your colleagues taking some very, what would be some very dramatic news photos of the Dublin riots.
That's right.
And yesterday I understand, your Rolling News, which is your media agency, were served with a summons by An Garda Síochána to access all your photographs, all the photographs of all the photographers from the agency from that night for the criminal investigations that are ongoing.
That's right.
And you object very strongly to this.
Absolutely, Katie. So practically, we don't want to be served, as my colleague Eamon Farrell said, that we don't want to be seen as the eye and the ears of the state, the press photographers and the press in general, is the impartial power, is the people power practically, or the state power, but it's the power that can actually show to the rest who are not on the event that happened, what actually happened. We are practically the eye to the rest of the people, whatever they are. So we don't want to be seen as the one who is going to be practically exposing, you know, justice or whatever injustice be of the night. So we're practically there, the observers. We want to be seen being the impartial, there, invisible people who are there to record what is happening.
Now, take me back to the night. And I just want to say before we go any further with this, of course, it's really important that we don't discuss any particular incident or any individuals that you might have taken photographs of on the night, because obviously there is, as we say, investigations ongoing. We don't want to compromise any of that. But was it a particularly... Did you feel in danger yourself on that night? Because, I mean, there was some very hairy things going on the streets of Dublin that night.
Yeah, true, Katie. I can go into details. I mean, not into details. I'm sorry. I know you mentioned that. But I can go into how I felt. But just before I go to that, I just want to say, really, we're using this opportunity as well to say, I mean, particularly with this event, I agree or not, but even in future events, people are listening now. We don't want to be seen as the bad guys. We want people to know that we are the impartial, that we are the media, that we are the press, who shows, even if the guards were beating excessively or the protesters were hitting the guards excessively, we want to be there. We want to be there and show this and not to be targeted ourselves.
You want to be invisible, basically, and be those eyes for
there.
The rest of us.
We're practically there, but we're not there. We are taking what is in front of us. We're not trying to protect the guards or protect the protesters. We are just doing our job of recording what's happening. That's it.
And again, not to go into any individuals, but what kind of a reaction do you get in a night like that when you're on the streets? There's a lot of aggro, you know, a lot of anger, a lot of things are happening. How do people react to photographers or to yourself and your colleagues on a night like that now?
Yeah, Katie, you know yourself. I'm in Ireland 20 years, but you can sense from my accent and my name that I am foreign myself. And this was around some... let's say far right and triggered events, you know, or whatever, you know. So I thought, should I go out there? Should I be, or even I have a daughter who's 15 and she's born here and she's totally Irish. You can't tell the way she speaks, you know, she's from Dublin. Mm-hmm. She said, "Daddy, just don't talk." She's so cute. So as a foreigner, I was a little bit scared. Will I be targeted or not? But I am European, so I'm fair. I can pass as Irish. I can pass as European. Mm-hmm. But I think people who would be more, you know, obvious Asian or African, they could have been more targeted from that point of view. But once I went there, I actually realized it's not much to do with what actually started. It just turned into kind of life for just breaking stuff. It wasn't really... I think people very quickly forgot all the people. I mean, the protesters or teenagers or kids, some of them, they very quickly don't even know why they were there or quickly forgot what this is about. So it just turned out a little bit to be kind of breaking windows, smashing stuff, going around with scooters. I was on Pinell Street, which is very, you know, it's now very ethnically mixed street. Mm-hmm. But I didn't see anybody being targeted on a base of, "Oh, you Pakistani, go away," because there was a lot of Pakistani shops, and the obviously shop assistants were there peeking through the windows, so the shops looking at. But all these people who were breaking stuff were passing by them, looking at them. Nobody abused anybody racially that I saw. It was more about just hooligans, just breaking stuff. But they were targeting the police, not the guards, not the actual people around who were, you know, so...
But I tell you, Sashko, over the years, like I would have, and not for some years now, but as a younger reporter, particularly I'm thinking in times up in the north, I would have been in situations where things kicked off, you know, when you would be kind of running for cover and that. Mm. In that circumstance, at the moment... Having your camera, you clearly being a member of the media with a news camera with you, is that a help or a hindrance to you right now, do you think?
Well, Katie, that's the other fear I had. First of all, thinking I mean, be as a foreigner there. Then secondly, I thought, as a press, how are they going to react? Because in Ireland, you know, people are not very used to this kind of riot. So what the riots, how do they react? How do they... what they do to the press. I was like, all these questions were coming into my head. But it didn't. It didn't feel that nobody targeted me because I had camera. And that's the problem we're going to come to now, that if people start seeing us, we're going to be targeted in the future. So we just want to be like we are now, to do our job and not to be seen as a threat. But if the courts or the guards are issuing orders to seize our photographs, then we can be seen as a potential, you
target.
Know, traitor.
As a target.
Target. Yeah, exactly. We're going to be the target because we're going to be there and they wouldn't want us to be there anymore, the protesters. And they'll say, "Oh, look, there's a camera there. There's a photographer there. Kick him out. Chase him out of the street. Or break his camera. Take his cards." We don't want that.
Okay. So, yeah, you the big fear basically is that you will be seen as another arm of the state.
It's not a problem. The moment is not a problem. Your question was, was I? I think I wasn't. I didn't see anybody tell me go away. But we don't want that to happen in future.
Okay. Will you stay on the line, Sashko? Because I've got Brian Hopper on the other line. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Brian, I believe you were a photographer.
Yes, I am a photographer, a landscape photographer.
Okay.
A little bit detached from the front street riots, but I used to regularly photograph in the city centre any riots. I had a general interest in reportage photography, and I was well used to being questioned by the Gardaí, marched aside and asked who I was and what I was doing.
Were you ever asked to hand over your phone?
No, I wasn't.
Would you object if you were?
I would not at all, no. I would see the greater good being served by giving the Gardaí the images. I would probably have a little bit of reticence in appearing in court as a witness to state what I was photographing or that these were my photographs. But if they were evidential, used for evidential purposes, I would have no issue whatsoever.
Do you,
in fact,
do you,
Most photographers produce the images to make money, to have them publicized and make money. So this is a natural result of being there and having taken the photographs.
Do you see Sashko's point, though, that if it becomes a common, you know, protocol that all media photographs are immediately available or easily available to the Gardaí, that then you become de facto part of the security side of things, and you lose the special status you have as a member of the media?
I can see his viewpoint, yes, and I can take it on board. But I would have to ask, you know, if you're there to take to do a particular job and take the photographs and produce them for the media, why would you have an issue with supplying those images then to the Gardaí? Most of them are published anyhow, either online or on printed matter. So they're available to the Gardaí.
Sashko, I'll let you back in. I doubt if most of them are published, given the huge volume of photographs that any photographer would take on a night like that. But Sashko, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, of course. Hi, Brian. So, look.
Hello.
Without disregard to Brian, he just said it himself. He's a portrait photographer or landscape photographer. The difference between us and Brian is that this is our job and we have to think for our future. We are press photographers. We're working for the press. We're going to be doing this more often than just Brian if he had time or he wanted or he felt like he wanted to go. This is our job. We need to go there. We need to be there. And why should I have problem with it? Yeah, for that reason, because I don't want to lose my privilege to be a press photographer. Otherwise, if I don't fight for this now, for my privilege to be the press photographer, and in general, press in the whole world, press is there to witness. And if we don't fight for this now to show our voice, we're going to be seen as a target by the protesters, and we're going to be seen as the guard by the guards if we object, as somebody who shouldn't be there on the street. And they can also, the guards start chasing us away as well. We'll lose both ways. So we are in the middle. We are invisible for both. We should be invisible for both. We're there just to witness what is happening.
Okay.
And yes, we are doing our job to make money. Of course, who doesn't? We all do living. But we also choose our jobs, what we want to do. And press photography is a certain type of photography that requires to be impartial.
Okay, Sashko, stay there, and Brian, stay there. I've got Michael on another line. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you were listening to our discussion there.
I was listening in, Katie, and listening to Sashko, and I think he's not living in the reality at all. I most certainly would agree with Brian and his opinion as to these photographs should be handed over. Like Sashko says, that he's there impartial and representing the local or the normal citizen like myself who can't be there. And I watched this on RTE television that evening unfolding here in the dock and couldn't believe what was happening in the capital city. And as those individuals were described and some people had an issue with them being described as scumbags, I think the general man in the street, that's the way he'd describe what was going on that night.
Okay, and I'm just going to ask you, Michael, to be very careful here, because again, there are investigations and inquiries ongoing in this, and we don't want to compromise anything.
Yes, I understand that, Katie. But most certainly, I think the situation here.
I may say to you, I don't agree.
Sorry, Sashko.
Sorry, Sashko. Just give Michael 1 second, and I'll let you back in. Then, sorry, Michael, finish that point.
Yeah, the point I'm making is a normal member of Irish society is that the expectation from the normal member of society is that if Sashko as a photographer is in a position to assist the Gardaí in their investigation to bring these thugs to justice, that's what the normal person on the street would want. But if Sashko is under some illusion that when he's there in this scene that these people have some you know, that they're not going to attack him, or they're going to say, oh, he's an individual photographer, we're not going to worry about him, or, you know, he's under some illusion.
Michael, can I just, and I let you back in, Sashko, but I think people who have been member, you know, in the media, in these situations over, you know, many years, that is the basis on which that they feel they have special status in these situations, in that they are completely impartial. And
it's an international law. It's not just in Ireland.
I understand that, but, you know, the events of that night were not the norm for this country, and most certainly it's not what we want to see happening on the streets of our capital city or any other town or city in this country. And I think, as normal citizens, we would expect, if somebody is in a position to assist the Gardaí to bring these people to justice, that's what we'd expect from the late Sashko.
Yeah, please, Sashko, please come back in.
Okay. So, Michael, just a question. How did you said you saw? You said what I have seen there on the TV and in the press. How did you see this? Because of me, because of my colleagues. That's how you saw them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have seen them. But what's going to happen now that our picture editor, if we've been seen as the one who are the eyes or the ears of the state? Next time, the protesters will say, the photographers are here, target them. And our picture desk will say, just pull back, just leave it. Just leave it, this doesn't work. Your life or your safety, just leave it. And Michael, tomorrow, won't be able to see all this.
No, well, I think that's you're wrong, Sashko, because I think, Sashko, like the rest of the public, I would be behind you as media and photographers to get the stories across to us. But most certainly, on the other hand, maybe these people involved in this type of activity might think twice the next time and say, well, there's a possibility here that we're going to be caught on camera and we're going to face, you know, and have to
but
justify our
actions. Michael, you're emotionally involved in this, which is fair play. I also, if you ask me if I agree with the protesters, of course I'm not on their side. I don't want public goods to be burned down and because my tax is also yours, paid for it. I don't want to see that. But it's important for me to be there to record that.
And you say, Sashko...
I don't think this is going to stop Sashko from recording that. And I don't see this any different as where the Gardaí would ask, let's say on a road traffic accident,
exactly,
or drivers
that's
that were in the vicinity to show their dash cam footage, you know?
And exactly that's what our point is, the press photographers and the press. Is this going to expose us as the bad guys? Is this going to jeopardize in future our safety and the safety of the liberty of you guys seeing the stuff?
Yeah, but I think what Brian said is important there, that obviously he'd have an issue, and I'm sure, Sashko, you'd have an issue as an individual standing up in court. And I don't think that expectation should be asked of you. But if the Gardaí are able
to
produce,
and I said to
if the Gardaí were in a position to produce images that they were able to say have come from a reliable source, and that was to assist them in prosecuting these individuals, I can't see any issue with that.
Okay, Sashko, hang on there again.
I would agree with that.
Sorry. Yes, thank you, Brian. And it was just I have another person who does agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Jack, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you doing?
Where are you on this then?
Just listening to
Michael,
not great, the gentleman's name, Sashko, at the start. I think that, and I'm coming at this from the perspective of I understand Garda work and where they're coming from, but I think he should not think of himself as under any threat because of this. He has to understand that this is a criminal investigation and all members of the public are called upon to assist in criminal investigations. It could be dash cam footage. It could be an impartial ambulance man at the scene of assault and has to go to court to say what he saw. But he shouldn't think of himself as that this opens a can of worms for them. They will be victimised in some way. They have to understand, as photographers, they're at the scene of incidents that
but isn't,
may
Jack,
record evidence.
Can I just put this to you, though, because isn't the difference here that if a member of the public is asked for their dash cam footage, that's a once-off. That member of the public isn't going to be required to be out in the scene of any other crime or any other incident. Whereas media photographers will be there the next time anything kicks off, and the time after that, and the time after that. And they need to think long-term in terms of how they are viewed in the eyes of the various actors in these scenarios.
Well, you see war correspondents going into, photograph war situations, and they're wearing bulletproof vests, and bomb helmets. For the very same reason, they understand the consequences of their job. And if somebody takes a picture that can be used in evidence, the press and media should be happy to assist. And I really don't think that they should fear that they'd be victimised in any way for it. There's not a history of
but
that.
There's a reason, isn't there, though, Jack, that and we've been seeing it, and unfortunately it hasn't been offered much protection to journalists in the current what's happening in Gaza over the last number of months, but that they do wear media emblazoned on any vests, and that is because they are asking the various parties to a conflict to accept that they are not party to it. So I think Sashko's
and they're not, and if their photographs are handed over, they're still impartial. They're not party to anything, and they're no more than any citizen might give a statement about what they saw. They shouldn't see themselves in any way as being possibly victimised because of this.
But it's not how they see themselves, surely, Jack. It's how their fear is how various other people will see them.
Well, again, I don't feel in the same way as if somebody has caught shoplifting and Tesco's have to hand over CCTV of the shoplifting incident in their store. There's not a history of people going back and setting fire to the Tesco shop because they assisted in the criminal investigation. And at the end of the day, if it's a criminal investigation and they have evidence, they should hand it over. All other matters are secondary.
Okay, hang on there, Jack. And I'll just that's a fairly straightforward thing, Sashko. If there's a criminal investigation and you have evidence, it is beholden on everyone to hand it over.
Sorry, that's a question for me, is it, Katie?
Yeah, just respond to that directly, because I think that's what Michael and Brian and Jack are all saying, basically.
Well, look, I've been asked to go in court in the past cases, and we always we went there and we sat down and we said I'm on the press. I'm a member of the NUJ, the National Union of the Journalists, and I would like to be impartial here, and I would like to be seen as that way, and I put my stand in front of the judge. And the judge didn't say much, to be honest, in that case. And I was just asking, those are my images. I said yes, and that's how it goes. But the problem is that we don't want this to continue to become a precedent, that that's the way to solve problems. Because I know that the public is furious with what happened and how the hooligans treated the guards and how they treated the city. I'm furious myself, but that doesn't... It will open a kind of worm there, which said, I think, Michael, because, we want to keep this right, to be there for the next protesters. And the ones, maybe it's going to happen that it's going to be a water charge protest, that the public won't be happy with the state, or it could be a social issue problem, not only problem that where the hooligans will be on the bad side. Maybe Michael will see himself on that side as well, where he would like to protest. And the guards will be the one who will be taking his liberty. And we would like to be there to capture that and to say in the press, these honest citizens were treated by the guards like this and like that. Like many other countries where there's no democracies or claimed democracies, like even somebody mentioned the bulletproof jackets and the press on them. That's still happening. They've been targeted deliberately.
Can I come in there, Katie?
You can, but just before you do that, I just want to, because I feel that Sashko is the only media photographer that we actually have here, but I do have, looking at a statement here that the National Union of Journalists issued in relation to exactly this demand for these photographs from that night. They say that they have grave concern at the decision of An Garda Síochána to seek a court order compelling Rolling News, www.rollingnews.ie photographers to hand over images taken on that night. Seamus Dooley, who's the NUJ Irish Secretary, he said the decision to try and force the photographic news agency to hand over images was an extremely dangerous move and could put at risk photographers covering public order incidents. So that's what the Union for Journalists, that's how they view that.
Here you go. It's not, we're not alone.
I understand the statement coming from them, and most certainly if I was a photographer, I would be looking for my representative body to be protecting me in that. But as Sashko said, you know, they're going to be a precedent set. What happened that night was unprecedented in this country. And, you know, as Sashko said, maybe someday I might want to go out and protest. And I most certainly would hope that that would be the case, that any of us can go out. But that was not a protest. That was pure violence and thuggery on behalf of a far-right group that need to be brought to justice.
Again, let's not go into what it was or it wasn't or who was doing what on that night. I don't think there's any dispute or debate about, you know, the fact that that was a very serious incident, Michael. But can I just give you another couple of lines from Seamus Dooley? He said the photographer's ability to do their job is compromised if they're seen as not being independent or if they're seen as agents of the state. And the other point, which is a really important point, actually, is that by definition, photographers are more obvious because they have their equipment with them, which is again makes them another target. And they're sitting ducks because, whereas reporters can actually hide and blend into the crowd, photographers stick out and they are more of a target.
Well,
Sashko.
Just from the perspective of the general public, and that's where I'm coming from. The incidents of that night were unprecedented. And obviously the photographers are concerned, but the Gardaí have went to the bother of getting a court order, which wouldn't be the normal. So that was unprecedented for the photographers.
Well, it wasn't unprecedented, actually. That's about, I think, about a half a dozen times that I've seen that those kind of summonses issued.
Can I come in there?
Yeah, but a half a dozen times, Katie, in the greater good of the country, I don't think is very much.
Okay, Sashko, go on.
Yeah, well, I mean, Michael said it's unprecedented. Well, it's not up to us to sort this way of dealing with the public order. It's the guards now know where the day failing happened. They need to do strategy of public order in future or bring more guards or do it in a different way. It's not up to us to sort that. We shouldn't be the one who be paying the price for it. There is an easy way to find who was it. Let's see the pictures of the photographers.
But all you're doing, Sashko, is providing images for them. You know, images which are going to form part of the evidence to bring these individuals to justice.
Okay,
and that's what the gallery is trying to do. And I think that's what the general public would want to see.
Okay, one voice. Is that you, Brian, trying to get back in there?
Jack here.
Or Jack.
The NUJ obviously are concerned about having a free and independent media. I would say if media are given a pass on matters like this, it doesn't make them free and independent. It's contrary to a free and independent press if they're given a pass from supplying evidence in a serious criminal prosecution or investigation. You know, if they're given a pass out from revealing their evidence, you know, it puts them at odds with a free and independent and fair press. That's what I would say. And at the end of the day, let's not get too far bogged down in it. That it's simply they're asked to provide evidence that they have about a criminal prosecution, and they should not fear anything from that.
I'm just reminded
here. Well, it's easy to say because you're not one of them, so.
I'm just reminded here, actually, of the Charlie Bird. We were talking about Charlie, whose funeral, of course, was on today. He was attacked while reporting on a riot, very famously, in O'Connell Street back in 2006. So, you know, even back then, journalists could become a target if they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And
It's quite possible, no more than ambulance men, firemen, nurses, doctors, Gardaí, judges. It's quite possible, unfortunately, but we can't legislate for
for what, you know, may happen like that by allowing people to withhold evidence from a criminal investigation.
Sashko, I'll give you one last word on it.
Well, look, we have been spat on, shoved in the past. I'm not just talking about this event. This event actually didn't have any troubles. And like the anti-vax, COVID and all that protesters will be seen as covering up for the media, will be seen by the guards covering up for the protesters. So we'll be seen from the objective side, side of one side and to the other side. All what we want to do is be there and take picture of what is in front of us and use it the next day to inform the public, to inform the people, to come up into the press, to be there for you to see. And we fear that this can be taken away slowly. And this is happening, okay, first time. No. Now, before it happened, that we were called in the courts just to be witnessed, but now there's actual warrants, and that's to make the big difference. There's actual judge warrants, and this is that's why we're so vocal this time.
Okay, Sashko, we'll leave that one there. I'm sure it's not the last we are going to hear about it. Thanks to Jack, thanks to Sashko, Brian Hopper Photography, thank you very much, and Michael.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And you're welcome back. Now, have a little listen to this. Ah, yeah, the dulcet sounds of the Gartha band. Rosie, good afternoon.
Hello, how you doing, Katie?
Rosie, you are very disappointed to hear that the Gartha band won't be where they normally are at this time of year.
Yes, I am indeed. I just wanted to highlight something there, Katie, that I've heard that the Gartha band won't be performing in the St. Patrick's Day parade this year. I go every year with my family. I'm a very proud Irish person and I'm absolutely devastated to hear this. And I don't really know why, but I just thought I'd point it out there.
And come here, why do you love the Gartha band so much? Why is it so important to you to see them in the Paddy's Day Parade, or the Patrick's Day Parade, I should say?
I just think they're part of the fabric of being Irish. I mean, they've been there. They started from the very beginning of the site. I don't know if many people know this. They're there every year. It's a consistent thing. The kids love seeing them. You know, they play in the community as part of their job on a daily basis. That's something, you know, a lot of people mightn't know about them. And they're just lovely. They set a high standard, you know, of music, and they represent our country. And you often see them on the telly when the president comes on, you know, they might be welcoming dignitaries to the country, as well as the Army Band, but the Garda Band too. And I just particularly love their music and the way they represent us being Irish. And I'm just sad to hear that they aren't going to be there. I don't know why. I just was wondering, could you kind of highlight that for me?
Well, we actually asked. Of course we did. And we got a statement in from the guards there just before we came on air. So they told us that there are currently 22 Gartha members from all ranks allocated to the Gartha band. I would have thought actually there was more. They seem like they make a great sound for 22 members. They say due to the reduced number currently in the Gartha band, the Gartha band is unfortunately unable to partake in the National St. Patrick's Day Parade in Dublin this year. Instead, a number of members from the Gartha band are attending a St. Patrick's Day event in Europe. And they say then that An Gartha Síochána is fully committed to the Gartha band and has made applications to have the numbers increased. An Gartha Síochána will be represented in the National St. Patrick's Day Parade this year by a marching contingent from the Gartha College, the Gartha Mounted Unit and the Gartha Dog Unit. But tragically, no Gartha band members will be in that parade. So that's what they're saying. I suppose, because we're hearing, of course, they have a huge recruitment and retention crisis in the Guards. Maybe that's what's hitting the Gartha band as well, Rosie.
Well, I'm sad to hear that now, I have to say, Katie. I mean, they play music. They're at the forefront all the time and they represent the Guards themselves. So So why hit them with the resource issue? You know, it's totally, you know, not acceptable. And why are they playing in a different country? They're part of our country. They were there from the beginning of the state, and they should be playing there on Patrick's Day. The world is looking at us that day. That parade is all over the world, and the Garda bands won't be there.
Will you still go to the parade, Rosie?
Of course, yeah, every year. I love it, you know. It's brilliant, it is. I'm really looking forward to it now.
What is it about the Patrick's Day parade that you get such a buzz? And so many people get a buzz. And I mean, I know, obviously, it's a big tourist attraction, but a lot of families will be in there with their kids. What is it about that parade that makes it so special for you?
I think it's just because I'm Irish and I feel Irish that day. And you get to meet other people, and other people from different countries they feel Irish as well. It's a big international thing, and it's a happy day. You know, it's the one day I actually love it. I mean, I actually even prefer it to Christmas. Just love it. The atmosphere in the city is amazing. It really is. It's such a buzz. I could stay there all day if I could.
but as you say, you'd be very sad that the Garda band won't be part of it this year.
Yeah, I am. I'm devastated now, I have to say. I have noticed now, I have to say, over the years that the numbers have got smaller year by year. And I don't know why that is, but, you know, I did notice that they're going down and down, you know. But, you know, how hard is it to give people a chance to play an instrument for their country, you know? Let's get them recruited and get them in there.
Yeah, well, actually, we have a family connection. My children's great-grandfather was in a very early member of the Garda band. It does mean something extra in our house. But sad to see that they won't be there this year. But as you say, hopefully that it isn't. It's just a once off. That hopefully that once they get the numbers back up.
I hope so.
Yeah,
I hope so. I'll be looking forward to seeing them next year and the year after. And I hope that the numbers grow and they get back to where they were, because they're absolutely brilliant. They really are. The standard of music is amazing. And they make me feel proud. I'm sure others around the country.
I'm sure you're not alone there. Rosie, thanks for that. I want to bring in Mildred now. And Mildred, I spoke to you before, I'm sure.
You did, Katie, surely to God. And more than today, I was within in a lovely little shop. And now today I'm in a restaurant. But I just said, we had a super day interview with you last year after me coming back from America. With playing with the marching band for St. Patrick's Day.
So, yeah, so tell me, what band are you with?
I'm with a local band, the Castlereagh Brass and Reed Band. So we're going to London tomorrow now. So we'll be representing Roscommon, the Roscommon Association in London on Sunday.
Lovely. And have you been practising for months for this now?
I wish. because of my age, I'm a bit long in the tooth now for the practice, but it's great to get together every now and again, and the young ones that come in, we practice with them and kind of show them the ropes and all that sort of thing. And it's just a great day, and to be representing, you know, your county is just absolutely great. Now we only go to America every 3 years because the fundraising is a bit tough for America. So then in between we go to London or Manchester. So tomorrow it's London.
And how many members do you have in the Castlereagh Marching Band?
Well, now for trips like this you'd have full house. So we have 22 going with us on Friday.
Wow.
And then we have a few supporters coming as well.
Now, yeah. I know I won't ask you to divulge your age on live radio, Mildred, but give us a general, what kind of ballpark are we talking about?
Well, they talked about, I suppose, the world knew it last year going down Fifth Avenue, all of 79. So I'm doing fine and I'm still wearing the high heels.
Oh, fair play to you, Mildred.
The stiletto heels are still to the good, so I'll be in my stiletto heels because I don't own a pair of flat shoes.
I do remember you saying that. And will you be wearing green sequins?
Well, in some of the parades, you know, they don't allow in some of the parades now, they don't allow you with all them that stuff, green stuff. They at the beginning of the parade, they check everybody to see that you're not wearing that. That's all right for just the ordinary person that comes, but for bands, it's a different story, you know.
And do you have a uniform?
Wearing shamrock. Oh, we have the Castlereagh colours. We have, like say, a black trouser and a maroon jacket and white shirt, and then a black and maroon hat. So that we'd be representing Roscommon, so we'd be having the Roscommon Castlereagh colours. Yeah, but to think that we'd be wearing anything like that, we just wear shamrock, the real sprig of shamrock if we have it, you know.
A discreet nod to the to the National Day.
And
Camille, can I ask you something? I've often wondered, watching marching bands over the years.
Yes.
Is it difficult to march and play at the same time, if you know what I mean? Is that a skill that you've got to pick up?
No, Katie. It's like dancing, Katie. If you have rhythm and you're good, you hear the music and dance. There's no one. Once you take off on your left foot, it's go with that, and your left foot goes with the beat of the drum. So I'm lucky in the sense that I give the beat with the drum.
Oh, you were the drummer, so, of course, yeah.
I'm one of the drummers. We have three drummers. There's myself and Dixie and Danny. So we have three drummers, and I'm one of the side drummers. So you take off on the left foot, and your beat goes with the left, with the beat of the bass drum. So it's easy, you know. And even if you're not a good musician, if you listen to that beat, you won't go astray.
And tell me, in London now, will you be there at the crack of dawn? Is it a big affair getting together for it?
Well, it is a big affair, but not as big as America now. It's not anything like America. And, you know, the Irish don't come out in London like they do in America. But still, as the day goes on, we don't have to travel all that far. There's a coach picking us up. We have about an hour and a half's journey. But we will have to be there pretty early. And then you have to wait your turn to be called in your certain position in the parade. And you have to stand. That's the worst of it, the standing waiting to be called in. Once the parade takes off, then you have to wait until you're called in. And once you're called onto the main street, then that's you're away then with it. And after that, you don't think about anything because the crowds are there and they're cheering and roaring and shouting and good and bad things to you.
Good and bad. I won't ask.
What are you doing over here? What are you doing over here? So you get good and bad, but mostly good things, you know. And once it's not raining and that, but be it raining, snowing, whatever it is, you've got to go, and that's that.
And that's that.
But it's a great experience, Katie, and it's great representing, you know, Ireland, and it's great, especially in these times, it's great to be representing Ireland and your county as well, and your little village here in Castlereagh. So we're very proud of them little things. And then you see, this thing that you're doing with me today, Katie, is the icing on the cake for us. So we really appreciate that.
Well, we really appreciate you talking to us again, Mildred. Always a pleasure to talk to you, I have to say. And Rosie, many, many thanks as well for kicking us off on that road on the Garda Band. We'll play you out with this.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I really enjoyed that little segue to the Garda Band, I have to say. And just before I go to my next caller, I want to let you know that they're doing something special here tomorrow. Joe is back and they're having a comedy special with St. Patrick's Day just around the corner. So they want all of you out there to let them know, what do you find funny? They want to know your favourite Irish joke, something hilarious you remember from television, from radio. Was there, you know, a comedian that you miss that you haven't been around for a while? Maureen Potter, Brendan Grace, Dave Allen. We all remember the really big jokes that all of those did. So get in touch with the programme. You know the numbers. WhatsApp is 087 484 8888 or phone in at 0818 715 815 or, of course, joe@rte.ie. They will be waiting and ready for you. That's here with Joe tomorrow. Okay. I'm going to bring in Aileen now. Aileen, good afternoon.
How are you, Kitty?
Hi, Aileen. How are you? Do you have any joke for us?
No, it's early in the day for that for me.
Okay, fair enough. I sprung that one on you. Aileen, you got in touch because you have an issue. Now, this shocked on the Gaeilge, and this is what we should be.
Gaeilge.
Indeed. So tell us your issue with On Board Pinola.
My issue with On Board Pinola is not with the staff. I have to be clear about that. I have been dealing with lovely people. But the problem I have with On Board Pinola is that on their website they say that they welcome the use of Irish language. And I like Irish, I love Irish, and I had brilliant teachers in my education, which they passed on a love of Irish. I had John Kelly, Tommy O'Malley, Christy O'Connell and Margaret Kennedy, and it was a love of Irish they passed on to me. So when I was making a submission to Board Pinola in relation to a project that I'm not going into today with you, but my problem with the project was related to heritage. And for that reason, I decided I wanted to make my submission through Irish. And that was important to me. And I also saw that they had on the website, they welcomed the Irish language. And I was delighted that that facility was there. So I made my submission in Irish. But ever since then, I have discovered that if you want to make your submission through Irish or work with On Board Pinola through Irish, they're totally under-resourced in my experience of them. And I have ended up being at a disadvantage due to the fact that I have chosen to use our national language that I'm entitled to use. And the problem I've had, for starters, at the very beginning when I put in my submission, it was on the 1st of September. Everybody had their submissions on the same day, so around that same time. All of my neighbours got their submission, their acknowledgement of their submission in English, which was a kind of a generic letter, which you'd expect there would be an automatic one ready for in Irish, because I worked with the Department of Education. I was on secondment for about 4 years, and we did not send out any document until there was a corresponding Irish and English version of them. So I didn't get my first reply until 2 weeks later. So obviously there was an issue with the Irish. Then come December, we got the responses back from the developer and the cover letter that I got. And my daughter, Brie Jean, as well, she's a musician and funeral director, but we got our letters, our cover letters were in Irish, totally ignoring the fact that we had sent our submissions in English. I was a bit annoyed about it, and I was coming up to Christmas.
Sorry, you got your cover letters in English because you put in your submission in Irish? Yeah, so okay.
Yes. Now, I didn't expect the document to be translated. I only expected our cover letter to come in Irish. This was coming up to Christmas week. Not the timing, really, for both and all, it wasn't very fair, but that's not the issue here. But my letter, I was a little bit annoyed about it. And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, this is not right. So I wrote a letter expressing my dismay and my disappointment with the service I was getting through in Irish. I have never got a receive any reply
response to that
letter. Then after, in January, then we had further submissions because that's the process. And I made mine through Irish again. And this time it was by email. And I got a response back in English by email. Then everybody got their English letters within a day or two in January. I had to wait 2 weeks for my response in Irish. And then the next letter we got...
Did they explain why the delay was?
The whole thing went ahead, I realised that what's happening there is that the letters had to be sent out for translation. Because what happened, the next phase was the forms were sent out, the registration forms for the oral hearing that we were granted. And my one came a day later than everybody's. Bridgine, my daughter, got an English version of the form. I got mine a day later. I got an extra day to respond and fill the form. But Bridget was in English. So I contacted the office about it, and I spoke to a lovely gentleman there in Irish. He had quite good Irish. He was a very nice man. He wasn't able to answer my queries directly, but he said somebody would get back to me, and that was no problem at all with that. So that was on a Thursday. And the following Monday, I had a call back. The call back was in English. Again, a lovely lady, very nice, couldn't be more helpful. But she explained to me basically that if I wanted the answers to the questions that day, that I would have to speak to her in English. Otherwise, I'd have to wait for them to go out to be translated. So I had, because I wanted, they were kind of urgent, the answers that I needed. So I opted to speak in English with her. And in the course of the conversation, I told her that the forms that we had got, that my daughter had got, she had got one in, they had subsequently, because we had the Commission Najanga had actually helped us as well, and my daughter had got an Irish version of the form. But the Irish version of the form we got was different to the, it wasn't a translation of the English form. It had different questions on it and different topics that weren't relating to our project. But to facilitate the lady that day, because she would have had to wait an extra 4 days for us to send back our forms if we were waiting for the other form. And I was conscious that they needed to get their agenda out. So I didn't want to hold everybody else up. So I said, you know what, if we just alter the form a little bit, can we send it back to you as it is? And we'll get it back to you today to facilitate you. And that was fine. We sent it back. Then the next thing was last Thursday, everybody, all my neighbours got the English version of the agenda for the oral hearing, which is on the 20th. They got their agenda. Now, bear in mind, the initial letter for the oral hearing specified 3 days, but there was no specific time for anybody, so nobody knew really. And that's understandable, because the inspector had to organise a timetable after that. So when I got, on last Thursday, on the 7th, everybody got their English timetable. I waited, and I got no timetable until today. And what has really annoyed me this morning was they put the agenda up in Irish and in English yesterday on the website, slipped it up under news and knew it. It's not even on the page for dedicated page for the case. And I'm raging, because for myself and Breach, we got our notification a week later than everybody else for an important days
that you have to prepare for.
If I wasn't in contact with any of my neighbours, I wouldn't know how long I had to speak for or when I was going to be speaking. Now, the other thing I noticed.
Can I stop you 1 second?
Yeah.
Just to be clear to people, why you said there, I'm raging. Why are you raging? Because people might say, look, you know, it's an inconvenience or it's annoying. But why are you raging about this, Aileen?
I paid €50 to make a submission last September in Irish. And I was treated with disrespect by the virtue of the fact that I only received my letter today when the information had been published for the public yesterday. I received my personal information in the post, my letter today, a week later than everybody else. And as far as I can see, I am at a disadvantage by using our national language with a government agency. And this is wrong. This is wrong that I'm being treated this way just simply because I've chosen to do my business with An Bord Pleanála through Irish.
It's not lost on anyone, I think, the fact that we're dealing with an agency that is known only through their Irish name, really, An Bord Pleanála.
If you look on their website, what they say about the Irish language, An Bord Pleanála welcomes the use of the Irish language and the organisation is fully committed to fulfilling its obligations and commitments in relation to the official language equality under the Official Languages Act 2003.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I mean, all public bodies are, as I understand it, supposed to be able to conduct their business with you through Irish if you choose to do that. Is that your understanding of the situation, Aileen?
I believe that we're entitled to a full service in Irish, the same as there's a full service in English. And at the moment, what it's looking like to me, I'm very disappointed, it looks more like lip service. And at a time when there's more and more Irish ads, Trigailge, on the television and everything, the HSC, there's loads of things. I like that because it's nice because we're hearing the language and people are hearing the language. But to me, it's only lip service. Why put it out in Irish if you haven't people? And I'm not talking about the HSC. My experience is the Bord Pleanála. Why promote the say that you're going to work through Irish if the board is not resourcing its offices with staff who have the language to speak the language and to work in the language? And I'd also question, how much are these documents costing to get translated? And why is it taking 2 weeks to translate a letter that's pretty generic?
You're saying the staff should be in place. We shouldn't be having to send this, this
and
out.
And I shouldn't have to be asking. And I was told this morning that a person has been employed in the last week to deal with some queries through the Irish language. And that was to a lovely gentleman that I spoke to this morning with lovely Irish.
Can I say to you, my sense is that I'm hearing a lot more Irish now than I would have done 5 or 10 years ago. Do you get that sense that it's becoming more part of, there is a revival out there?
Totally agree with you. And Bree Jean, my daughter, is doing it. She's actually started up a class there a few weeks ago in Eastgate. And the response is amazing. The amount of people that have forgotten their Irish from school or had maybe a bad notion about Irish, but also people who have no Irish whatsoever, and they're starting to learn the language with her, and they're loving it, and they're having great fun, and there's an enthusiasm for people, a desire to speak the language, and a desire to kind of use the language in our daily life, not just to, this is not just there in the libraries and schools or whatever. It's a functional language, and in order for it to be a functional language, we need to be able to use it with the government departments that we want to do business with.
Now we did ask on board Planola about this, and they didn't, to be honest with you, really, seems to me, looking at the statement, a few lines we got back from them, really respond directly to what we asked them. But here's what they said. They said that they, on board Planola, welcomes the use of the Irish language, and the organisation is fully committed to fulfilling its obligations and commitments in relation to the Official Language Equality under the Official Languages Act 2003, the Planning and Development Acts, and its Customer Action Plan and Language Scheme. And they say that they adopted their fourth language scheme under the Official Languages Act in 2015. And it said this scheme seeks to build on previous schemes by maintaining and enhancing services through both official languages, Irish
and
English.
And might I add to that, Casey, sorry to interrupt you, but that's a quote direct from their website, and it's the quote based, and the heading is Irish language. And if you go to the Irish version of it, you'll get it in Irish as well on the website. But they, and you, if you wrote to them in Irish, you might have to wait a week or two for the response.
Right. Aileen, keep up the good fight, and we'll talk to you again. Take care.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Take care.
Thank you, Casey.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Fáilte ar ais, Katie Hannan, Courtney Hannan on show. In for Joe today. I want to go to Kieran now. Kieran, good afternoon to you, Kieran.
Katie, how are you? Are you well?
I'm very well, Kieran. We're doing a lot of chat about photography today, but
it's great.
Indeed. But this is on the lighter side of things, if we can put it that way, compared to what we were talking about, the Dublin Rights there earlier on in the programme. Yeah. This is something that everyone is talking about, Kieran, which is photoshopping and touching up and manipulating photographs to make them appear different to the way they would have been in the natural world. So tell me, you obviously are a very well-known photographer going back many, many, many years. I won't put any age in you, Kieran, but you've been around for some time, shall we say.
I have.
Before, I would have thought that the kind of editing that's totally common now would have been, popular or profitable.
Oh, well, the type of editing that's going on now, a lot of people use editing on their Instagram on their phone, and they talk about filters, and we don't as professional press photographers, we don't use filters. And when somebody mentions the word filter to me, I nearly fall over, because we don't even approach those subjects with filters. I think filters, they just sort of seem to airbrush the face and take all the lines out of them and just give a lovely sort of clean, line-free face, and that's what they're talking about on their Instagram. But I think the subject mainly is the Kate picture that's a lot of people are talking about at the moment.
Absolutely,
and I do feel sorry for her, but I don't think there was much malice involved. But I think there was small bits of Photoshop done, and badly done on the photograph, and I don't think there was any need for Photoshop on that photograph. Looking at the picture and looking at the changes that were made, there was no real need to Photoshop that picture.
But do we have the original picture? I didn't think there was any. I don't think they've released the original picture.
They haven't released the original picture. But from reading articles about and looking at the picture, they changed certain sections of the picture. But I don't think they changed the overall picture. I don't think they changed faces or changed faces around. But they certainly changed parts of the picture. And I think the word kill, when people heard that the picture was killed.
Yeah, this is where the international agencies put out this kill alert saying, take down, this picture has been manipulated, we're not circulating it.
Because it would happen from time to time, we would put out a picture, and we might have to, the word kill is used, the word spike is used, the word retracted is used. We might, normally when we take back a picture, when we put it out, it's because the wording is wrong, or maybe there's the subject is wrong in the caption, but not really much that's wrong in the photograph itself. But it would normally be concerning the caption of the picture, and then we'd reissue the picture then again.
On that then, Kieran, though, what would cross the line for you as a photographer? Because I'm sure you'd make people look a little bit better in their photo than maybe
slightly.
They did.
Well, all we normally do is if there's a little bit of a colour cast on the picture, we might correct the colour cast. If it's a little bit, depending on the temperature of the day, if it's a cold day, you might have a little bit of a blue cast on the person. So you might add a little bit of red into the picture to warm up the picture. If the day is very hot, you might add a little bit of blue just to bring the skin tone back down to a normal skin tone. You might put a bit more detail into the shadows and put a bit more detail into the highlights of the picture. But that's basically all we would do. We would never add anything to the picture. We would never take anything out of the picture to make it better.
Would you not? I mean, I'm thinking like headshots, like that people, these photographs that people get taken for business purposes and PR purposes. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people would expect that they would look slightly better in those photographs than they would have done if they took them themselves.
Well, I tell you, I spent about 5 hours today editing. We use the term edit when we were going through our pictures, looking at the pictures and, sorting the pictures out that, the eyes are half closed or closed, or the smile is a bit wonky, or the hair is a bit wonky. We take all those out. We might take 50 pictures and give them 10. Give them maybe the best 10. So I spent about 5 hours today going through about 50 headshots. And you would only really take something out, like if somebody had a bad day and they had a big spot on the end of their nose, you might take that out just something like that. But overall, we wouldn't do much with the pictures.
If somebody had, bags under their eyes, a heavy night out, would you sort that out for them?
Very reluctantly, I'd ask.
I'm taking that as a yes, Kieran.
I'd be very reluctant to do it because I don't want to change the picture. If it's a headshot, if it's a picture that's going to go into the paper and it has to be. A resemblance of what they are and they look like. We can't really change that. It's not what we're about as press photographers. We just don't do it. We really shy away from doing it. A lot of changes are made by graphic designers after the fact. When they leave our hands with photographs and they go to some of the glossy magazines, sometimes graphic designers might change something in the photograph, or if it's been used for an advertisement, it might be changed then as well.
Okay.
But as press photographers, we wouldn't do it. And that picture, the Kate picture, I do feel sorry for her because she's she does a lot of pictures of the kids herself, and you can see that the kids are very happy and very content and very relaxed with her. And I think it was a bit of a speed bump for her at the moment.
Well, you'd have to have a heart of stone not to feel for her in the circumstances, because the frenzy is unbelievable. Listen, Kieran, before you go, tell me about the Irish football team.
Oh, there's one famous picture, the Irish football team. Oh, years ago, back in the 90s, the Irish football team were having their official team picture taken in Lands End Road, and I was knocking around Lands End Road, and I seen this going on, so I took a sort of a, I was back a little bit, and I took a picture of it. And in the picture, there was about maybe 13 or 14 of the Irish soccer players, and then there was about 11 waiters in the picture that they were going to drop in the heads on them afterwards in Photoshop. For their official.
So these were body doubles, basically, placeholders for the pictures,
Yeah, so I got back to the office. The editor saw the picture. He was delighted. They put it on the front page of The Independent, and all hell broke loose after that.
Editor, not a football fan, obviously, if he thought the waiters were on the Irish squad.
Yeah, they were
time.
Wondering who all these Italian waiters were. Were they joining the Ireland soccer team? You know, secret signings, you know, but. Yeah, I think they wanted to put out an official poster. I think, I can't remember whether it was Italia 90 or where they're going to the World Cup in America a couple of years later. But
that actually appeared in the paper. We can find it in the archives if we go looking now.
It's there somewhere.
Kieran, I'm told I have to go to ads. Thanks. Thank you so much for that insight into your world and into the photoshopping world. And I'm sure we'll be hearing much more about this as time goes on.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And that's it for today on Sound. We had Kieran Cullen. Research today was Richie Byrne, and the programme was produced by Owen McLaughlin. Stand by now for Ray.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.